time once again for Community Forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning, Tom Carpenter. Tom Carpenter is the executive director of the Hanford Challenge. Prior to his current position, he worked as the director of the Nuclear Oversight Campaign for the Government Accountability Project from 1985 to 2007. He also founded the Cincinnati Alliance for Responsible Energy, helped establish and is a board member of the Hanford Concerns Council, and I believe still currently serves on the Hanford Advisory Board. Tom, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So lots to cover with what is going on out at our favorite nuclear reservation here in Washington, over in eastern Washington. Starting with, if we could, the developments around a push for new nuclear reactors.
Right. So for listeners out there who aren't aware, the Hanford nuclear site is a former plutonium production facility here in the state of Washington, and it's where the United States made most of its plutonium for its nuclear arsenal. Plutonium is the heart of the atomic bomb or the nuclear weapons that we have. And they started that facility in 1945, and the process of making plutonium is one of the, you know, more environmentally devastating processes out there. So now we've got one of the worst contaminated facilities in the world sitting here in Washington State. And we're going to spend billions and even hundreds of billions of dollars to clean this up. We've put a lot of people in harm's way, workers and downwinders around the site. And the Columbia River has certainly been the recipient of a lot of radionuclides and will be in the future. So given that's the background. So Hanford is really a nuclear nightmare in its own right. And yet there's now a proposal out there to have a new breed of nuclear reactors come to Hanford. They're called small modular nuclear reactors, and this is a national push. So the Department of Energy and the Obama administration is making some $600 million, you know, maybe about $500 million available for research and development of these small modular nuclear reactors. And the Hanford community wants some of that money. They want to develop that. There are some people there with big plans to not put one reactor there, but to make the reactors there maybe, and have a new lease on life for the nuclear dream.
And the bulk of our Washington lawmakers support this.
Well, that's true. A letter was just released by Representative Doc Hastings. He is the congressional representative over there in the Tri-Cities, where the Hanford site is in southeastern Washington. And I think my shock, every congressional representative from the state of Washington except for Jim McDermott signed this letter saying that they would like to see, urging the Secretary of Energy to choose Hanford for development of the small modular nuclear reactor. And I guess it's important to say that the these reactors are experimental, number one. They don't have them deployed out there. There are a bunch of different designs, but every single one of those designs does make nuclear waste. They all have safety issues connected with them. They have proliferation concerns. There's threats from terrorism. In other words, the same kind of issues that you get with regular nuclear plants haven't been solved in these small modular nuclear reactors. They're at a smaller scale, but it's important to note that, you know, the radioactivity inside these smaller plants is still very dangerous to human life at microscopic levels. So there's a certain irony, of course, in wanting to build a reactor at Hanford to help power the waste treatment plant, which is supposed to clean up and vitrify or put into glass the nuclear waste that's been created from the past. So now you've got this feedback loop of creating more nuclear waste to clean up the waste that's already there, and it's not lost on us. And And of course, there's also the financial issues connected with this. It doesn't look like these kind of reactors are going to be any financially any more viable than the nuclear industry itself has been. The cost per kilowatt is going to be quite expensive from all indications, and it's just not penciling out. And yet we've got, you know, here in the state of Washington, last year, many people are aware that the Bonneville Power Administration ordered the shutdown of some of our wind generating capacity because of too much power in the grid. So why the heck are we talking about, a new generation of nuclear about a year after Fukushima happened? You know, it seems like, wow, our capacity for learning, as a human race is, I think most people would understand this is probably a dumb idea, but politics and money mix in odd ways to produce these kind of results.
All right. Well, you mentioned the waste treatment plant, and the news continues to come out about that. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Well, so we've got at Hanford about 56 million gallons of high-level nuclear waste in these large underground tanks. There's a couple of hundred of these tanks. They hold about a million gallons each. And a third of those tanks has already failed. So we're looking at nuclear waste already in the soil and some of it hitting the groundwater and into the river. And that's a very, very bad thing. If you took a teacup of this waste and put it in a restaurant, you know, it would kill everyone in the restaurant in short order. That's how radioactive this stuff is. Small amounts of it ingested into your body would also cause a health concern very quickly. So the approach that the government has come up with for dealing with this highly toxic liquid radioactive waste is to mix it with molten glass in a facility called the waste treatment plant. And the glass would be poured while it's still hot into these big, you know, torpedo-like cylinders allowed to cool, and then those cylinders would be buried in a deep geological repository somewhere. It needs to be kept away from anything that's living for about a million years. That's how long this waste will be dangerous. 100,000 to a million years is what they say. It's the distinction is almost meaningless, right, to us. But for future generations, I'm sure it makes a big difference. So the waste treatment plan is supposed to do that. It's supposed to accomplish that. And now we're 12 years into building this plant. And the government had decided to use what's called a fast-track approach, which is they'll design a little bit of this facility and then build to the design. And the problem with that approach is that this is a one-of-a-kind facility, and they didn't have a pilot project. So the design kept changing, and they haven't solved some of the design problems. So now we're nearing the end of the design and construction process, except we've got a lot of the plant already built. And they're finding that the design is flawed and that there's going to be safety concerns that they thought wouldn't be there, but in fact are going to be impacting the public in the future, perhaps. And this comes in the way of if you don't properly mix this nuclear waste, it produces hydrogen gas, and that hydrogen gas is very explosive. It can catch on fire, and this facility is not behind a secondary containment. Right. So if there's an accident or a fire or a release, it just goes straight out into the environment. So a fire or an explosion in this facility is a very bad idea. Also, it's a single point of failure, meaning if you have some kind of accident in that facility, the facility itself won't work. There's nothing that about it will. So this is, you know, right now it's a $13 billion investment into this factory. It's estimated to cost anywhere from $60 to $70 billion to operate. That's billion with a B. And it is our only way to deal with this nuclear waste. So the top scientists out there and top engineers are sending us the warnings. They're blowing the whistle and really sacrificing their careers to come forward and tell everyone who will listen from, they've appeared in USA Today. They've been on Rachel Maddow. They've been on this show to talk about the safety concerns and the technical issues. Well, finally, now, the Department of Energy is paying attention. They're admitting that their safety culture out there is broken, that it's impacting the ability of the plant to operate safely. It's not operating yet, but in the future, the design issues, the design issues for the that are going to be looked at now are going to impact the future operations. So you've got to get it right now and build it correctly, or you're going to have a problem later. So they're admitting to all that, and they've got to fix that safety culture so that workers can, employees can come forward with a safety concern. In January, the Department of Energy came out with a very interesting study that showed that 70% of those surveyed at the plant said they were not comfortable in challenging a management decision, right? So that's, you know, 7 out of 10 people said, no, I'm not going to challenge my boss. If he says that's the way it is, that's that. And over half of them surveyed said that they wouldn't raise or they weren't comfortable raising a safety concern. These are huge numbers and very disturbing, because it now brings up the issue of, oh, gee, well, what hidden defects are out there that we just don't know about? And we do know that vessels are arriving from vendors that make these like big tanks, you know, in other states and even other countries, full of defects, right? Bad welds. There's one vessel out there now that's sitting on Hanford soil that was made outside. It's got 60 major welds on it, only three of which are good. The other welds are just bad welds. So they sent an inspector inside this vessel. He found about 100 problems. How did this happen? This is supposed to operate inside a nuclear facility and keep us safe without maintenance for 45 years. And this kind of thing is going on. And, you know, I can hear Hanford now, Hanford manager, saying, yeah, but we caught that one. Well, what about the ones you did not catch? And that's what really gives us all the willies, is you're going to operate this facility in the future with some of the most dangerous volatile materials ever created by humans, and we have to get it right up front. So we've got somewhat of a choppy path ahead of us. If we're going to get this fixed, it's going to have to be a pause in construction and design, get that safety culture fixed, and then kind of rethink where we are. And that is not a popular option, because that means, you know, shutting down jobs temporarily. It means blowing legally enforceable deadlines, and the cost is going to go up. But if we don't do those things, we're going to lose the whole project. And let me get this straight. We are for this project. We want the waste treatment plant to go forward, and so does everyone else. We've got to have a plan for dealing with the waste in those tanks. If we don't do that, then those tanks will continue to leak in the future. We'll have a bigger environmental mess, and we don't have a plan B if the waste treatment plant does not work. That's a long answer. Sorry.
No, that's great. So, and this facility is, once it is completed, is basically meant to run on its own. There's no way that you're going to be able to go in and tweak things if there's a problem. Is that correct?
That's a good point. The design of the waste treatment plant uses a black cell technology. And I guess it's called a black cell because once you seal it up, there's no doors, there's no windows, there's no lights. It's supposed to operate without any maintenance or inspection or repair for some 40 years, 45 years. Gee, I don't know of any place like that. And in fact, I think, you know, they've got this in Britain, and they did have a pipe leak. You know, there's a break in a pipe in a black cell at a place called Sellafield, and it ruined the plant. It was like 45,000 gallons of nuclear waste, and they're projecting that it might cost as much as $20 billion just to clean that up. So there's, you know, there's some risks with this approach, and there are other approaches they could have taken, but they kind of were in a hurry to get something going, and they hired the British to do the design. And now we're stuck with a design that really is getting in our way. So it's one of the things that they may have to redo or abandon as a technology, is that black cell technology.
And you showed me, when I was at your office a couple months ago, you showed me a photo or a series of photos of a mixing, a test run they'd done on, yeah. on mixing that showed heavy corrosion on the mixing parts, just like after 2 days worth of use.
Right. So they did run a test on whether or not these pulse jet mixers, which are like turkey basters. So they, you just imagine a big tank, and you need to mix it up. You need to mix the waste up and keep it well mixed at all times. What they're using is, if you put a big turkey baster in there and you squeeze the bulb and sucked up some liquid and then released it back into the fluid, into the pot, you know, it would boil it up a little bit. It would mix it up. And so now you've got dozens of these things, of these turkey basters going. That's supposed to mix this. Well, the waste is, in some cases, like ketchup or peanut butter, it's very thick and hard to mix. So it turns out that they underestimated the amount of pressure they would need to be able to sufficiently mix this waste to keep the hydrogen gas buildup and the nuclear criticality concerns, you know, to a manageable level. So we'll increase the velocity of these mixers. So it'll go up, you know, and that now is introducing new concerns about, will these things corrode and erode? Will it wear holes in the vessel? And unfortunately, the answer is yes, they will. The nozzles will deteriorate. The vessels will deteriorate at an alarming rate. We don't know exactly how fast, but unhappily, the designers chose a softness of metal that, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the hardest and 1 being the softest metal, was a 2. So we've got very soft metal. They can't just go rebuild all these tanks and vessels at this point, you know, without substantial reinvestment. So they're kind of in a pickle. And this whole part of the facility called the pretreatment plant, which will prepare the waste to go in these giant melters, that's at risk right now. And there's a lot of discussion about whether we can get by at Hanford without a pretreatment process, or can we do pretreatment somewhere else, or do we need to build a new pretreatment facility that makes better sense?
So, and again, just so I'm clear on this, so these photos, the corrosion after 2 days worth of use, potentially this could have been a part that was anticipated to work for 45 years.
Right. It's they won't. I mean, no scientists out there are now saying they will.
It
really
appeared it wouldn't make it for a week.
Right. Yeah. That's true. I mean, that's why you do test is to test your assumptions and your see if the thing will work as you think. And when they did that last December, and the funny thing about it was they weren't about to report that officially. It was a scientist who became a whistleblower that tried to do something about it, couldn't get listened to. He basically leaked the photos to the Los Angeles Times or to us, and we gave it to the Times and et cetera. So there's a real problem with transparency on this project. And we're getting all the news of import from whistleblowers, from people on the inside. And, of course, they're paying a big price for doing that. And there's something wrong with that, too.
You said earlier that 50 to 70% of the people working there didn't feel comfortable enough to come forward with problems. Of the few people that have, that you have represented with your group, the Hanford Challenge, like Walter Tamositis and Donna Bushy, what has been the reception of the information they've brought forward?
Well, the information has made a tremendous impact on the facility, especially since it's ended up in USA Today and Rachel Maddow and in the local papers and New York Times, Washington Post. So it's out there and it's made a huge impact. So the facility is on a de facto pause right now. They are talking about redesigning. They are talking about the safety culture, as I mentioned. So they are being very successful in getting their issues out there. When we started, they were ready to go. I mean, 2 years ago when they removed Walt Tamositis, who was their research and technology manager. He was almost the third or fourth in the rank out there from the top. In terms of managers, very high-level guy. When they removed him, they were trying to resolve and put to bed the last remaining technical issues. And then they were going to turn the corner, what they call pivot, to simply construction and commissioning. We are far, far from that at this point, 2 years later. And that's because of him. And it's also because of an agency that listened to him called the Defense Nuclear Facilities Safety Board. And we just call it the Nuclear Safety Board these days because of the acronym is just awful, the DNFSB. Well, anyway, this board was created by Congress to look at the Department of Energy sites like Hanford and nuclear safety, because one of the problems is that the Department of Energy owns this site and regulates itself. So when it, you know, when it comes to making a decision between it's going to cost more, it's going to delay the plant, or we're going to have to sacrifice safety, the state of Washington is there saying, you better not slip your schedule or we will sue you. And they've done that. And Congress is saying, you better not have this thing cost anymore or we're going to cut your money and people will get fired. Well, who's doing that for safety? Well, the only one doing that for safety is the Defense Board, this Nuclear Safety Board, but they don't have authority. All they have is influence. So they can write letters, they can hold hearings, and they are listened to. But they don't have the say-so on whether or not this plant opens or doesn't open, and they do need that. But they have, to their credit, been holding hearings on this. They've certainly been examining the issues being brought forward by the whistleblowers. They've had Donna Bushy, who is the manager of environmental and nuclear safety for the project, as a witness. They've supported her concerns. She's been on this show. She's been very, very vocal. And we're worried about her job, of course. She's still out there, but it's pretty clear that she won't be much longer. So there's fights ahead on that front. And we need people like that in the system if we're going to repair this plant and get it back on track.
Just a little over 5 minutes left. So what other issues do you see as critical that are taking place at Hanford?
Well, you know, there are – what's coming up is – the government is planning to release what's called an environmental impact statement, and it might be August or September, and this will set the tone for the future of the cleanup out there. The draft of this environmental impact statement was awful. In fact, you know, they're required to look at all the alternatives to the, you know, what they should do for cleanup, including how they should clean up the tanks, how they should run the plant, the VIT plant, the waste treatment facility, how much waste they should clean up from the soil, how much groundwater, all those things. And none of the alternatives they mentioned happened to comply with environmental laws, not a single one. In fact, they said that in a few hundred years, the shoreline of the Columbia River there, which Hanford sits on the Columbia River, would be awash in plutonium at 300 times the acknowledged safe level for plutonium contamination. That's with the cleanup being done. So we've got a huge problem with the amount of cleanup that is on, you know, is currently on the books. So the urgency here is getting people to weigh in as a region, you know, to become aware of what's going on at the Hanford site, that decisions are being made now in the next few years about these kind of issues, about how clean is clean. And of course, we've got our entire political spectrum pushing for the new nuclear reactors out there, including Jay Inslee, by the way, who's I like him. You know, I think he's very much into good, you know, green energy, et cetera. But this is one call that I don't agree with. And I think the public ought to be weighing in with their representatives on what they think about a new generation of nuclear at the Hanford site. It's quite concerning to me.
How can people get involved with this issue?
Well, you could go to Hanford Challenge's website. It's hanfordchallenge.org. Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility is out there. They're working on this. Heart of America Northwest. Columbia River Keeper for those folks down in Oregon. So there are groups that are paying attention to what's happening. We know how to plug people in based on their skill sets and you know, their interest and their passions, anywhere from a scientist to someone who wants to staff a table. If all you want to do is do something right now or in the next week, pick up your phone, call your representative, call your senators and say, what's this about new reactors at Hanford? And say how you feel about that.
How critical are the public meetings that they have? I know they had a series of them this last May, and there was relatively good turnout, I heard, for the Seattle one. But how critical is it to the people in D.C. and Tri-Cities that people show up to those?
Oh, it's hugely critical. It's very, very important. And even though it doesn't seem like it when you go to the meetings because they, you know, I call it kabuki theater. Everyone says kind of the same thing, and the agency reps often sit up there and don't answer questions. That's starting to change. But when there's almost a 100% consensus from the audience, and there's thousands of comments opposed to, an insufficient level of cleanup, for instance. So we need better cleanup, opposed to bringing more waste to bury on the Hanford site. Then that makes a big difference. And in fact, since, you know, we had an initiative out there, I-297, was an initiative to block the bringing in outside waste to bury at Hanford to stop Hanford from becoming the nation's nuclear waste dump. And a coalition of groups worked on that in 2004. That initiative passed with some 70% of the vote in favor of that initiative. And even though the Ninth Circuit overturned it and said, no, they can do what they want at the Hanford site, there has not been any nuclear waste brought in and buried out there. It was a very significant political message for the state of Washington and for Washington, D.C. and our own representatives that this is how people feel. They want this site cleaned up. They don't want to add new waste to it. It's all about how the public feels and how energized they get to weigh in on this because people's political careers can ride or fall on an issue like this.
Just about a minute left. Can you briefly give us a really quick summary of Fukushima?
Fukushima is still there. We're still having an accident a year and 3 months later. Reactor number 4, the spent fuel pool, is still in a very precarious condition, and they're having weekly earthquakes still. Nothing as bad as what they did have with the 9, but they are having 6s and 7s all the time. There's a great deal of concern about whether or not the spent fuel pool, which has a tremendous inventory of cesium and strontium-90 in it, if it fails, that it could be much worse than the original accident, which is kind of scary because the original accident obviously contaminated huge areas of land and sea, and that's still happening. They still have not controlled any of the reactors that have melted down. This is going to be a very, very significant long-range issue for us, and we're seeing it here now in Washington as the debris is starting to wash up on Washington and Oregon shores and down to California. To my knowledge, they haven't found a piece of radioactive debris yet. That's good news, but they have found, you know, some radioactive sea life, and that's probably going to continue. Fukushima is of great concern and remains that way.
Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Hey, thanks, Mike. My pleasure.
We've just been talking with Tom Carpenter. He is executive director of the Hanford Challenge, and you can find out more about their organization via their website, hanfordchallenge.org.